Welcome to Update One, the podcast of the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Update One provides a forum for listeners to learn about national stories focusing on news, politics, and current events. Now, the latest edition of Update One. Has the Trump White House been in chaos? With all the recent staff changes, some observers think so. In this edition of Update One, we'll focus on how those staff changes have impacted the administration's communications, the reporters covering the White House, and the public. Joining me to discuss these issues is American University journalism professor Jill Olmstead, a former radio and television news anchor and reporter. Jill, welcome to Update One.
Thank you, Mike. Happy to be here.
I'll ask you the same question. Has the White House, and specifically its communications team, been in chaos, in your opinion?
It's been a classic soap opera. Humiliation, drama, personalities, wins, losses. The general public can be fascinated and yet appalled at the same time. We all see car wrecks, we crane our necks, and then if we actually saw something, we'd be appalled. So it has become a circus, and a circus that impacts people's lives. So that's what's unfortunate about the communication message here. There are problems in every administration. There's no doubt about that. But this one is pretty spectacular in the number of people and the volume of people that are involved in all of this.
Now, as a former reporter, when you see all these changes made, when you hear about all these changes, what's going through your mind?
Well, you're wondering what the truth is. Now, the truth is always something that reporters strive for. And when you have either public relations people who hide, mislead, conceal, distort, or otherwise conceal the truth by leaving things out, then what happens is there is a distrust that ferments, and it becomes worse and worse. And just like the old cliche, sometimes it's not the problem itself, but the cover-up. And I'm beginning to feel that what we're seeing is a lot of people that are trying to cover their own voices and those of others with things that won't implicate them. And the problem with that, of course, is that the president may be able to cover himself, but he's going to be less effective at covering those around him who are not going to have the protections that he has. So I think what you're seeing is some people that are dedicated public servants who are sweating it out over, gosh, am I going to do my job? Am I going to be able to get at the truth, or am I going to be used by this person, this administration, this cause?
It seems like this administration in particular has had a lot of leaks. And I know the former White House communications director, Anthony Scaramucci, was brought in to put an end to those leaks. Of course, he lasted less than 2 weeks. But it seems like with all these leaks going on, that's going to obviously contribute to the message that the reporters are getting and thus the public's getting, and you could wind up having a misinformed or an uninformed public.
Well, you know, there have always been leaks, and there will always continue to be leaks. Leaks are not created equal. You have leaks that are done for purposes of jealousy, or maybe they want to float an idea for a public policy issue. Or to advance themselves personally. But then you have leaks that affect our public security, our public policy, and that's a completely different thing. I think we should really kind of look back at history. Leaks are not just totally bad. They can be used by an administration to their promotion of their viewpoints. If you go back to the Pentagon Papers and President Johnson misleading the public and the Congress on the course of the Vietnam War, well, then what happened is, if that wasn't bad enough, then the White House ordered the plumbers, right, to discredit Daniel Ellsberg, the leaker, And the government had dropped the case of espionage and theft of government property based on that. And the reason I bring that up is because it does go back to a repeat of history, that it's not always necessarily that something was wrong by talking to some Russians. But why are you obfuscating? Why are you misleading? Why is it going drip, drip, drip? And it, even if there's nothing wrong, it has the appearance of a conflict of interest and being dishonest. And so if you have a buildup of dishonesty, it's like any human relationship. Can you have a human relationship where you don't trust your partner? Can you work for a boss that you are constantly worrying about whether you're going to be fired or someone is going to publicly shame you? That doesn't make for a cohesive team environment. And sure, team rivals can be kind of healthy, but it's been carried to extremes, is my view.
Let's talk about the tweets. Obviously, President Trump likes to tweet. He often does it very early in the morning and continues throughout the day. That's something new. There's been no other president in the history of the U.S. who's tweeted as often as he has. And it seems like reporters and the public are still adjusting to that.
We are. And it's a new medium that is very short and simple. And so from that vantage point, it can be a really terrific way to get a message out. So it's not that tweeting is bad. In fact, tweeting can be used to advance a cause, to educate the public. But it has a, it's a double-edged sword because it's not the medium, it's what you say. And for example, something as simple as the stock market could hit an all-time high again today. Well, fine, that's great. But then why put the last part of that message as, of course, fake news media would never tell you that. That constant negativity that is drummed in, it's almost like a beaten child. When you are constantly getting this negative message with tweeting, even if you're, the initial part of your message is positive, I think, again, it affects your credibility. It certainly affects how people consider you as a leader or not. And I also don't think you can't have it both ways. You can't have a media person saying about the president, well, you can't take him literally, and then the next tweet that you see is about transgenders not being able to serve in the military. That, coming from the president, becomes public policy. So you can't have it both ways. It's got to be one or the other. He needs to really be educated, I guess, in terms of what is a good positive way to use this message. I know that the Obama administration, they were pretty proactive in their use of video at the White House and getting a very positive message out there by having pictures, which, of course, goes back to the Reagan administration. President Reagan might have people who were disputing his viewpoint, but the optics in back of him were an American flag and cheering crowds. So it didn't even matter what was said. The optics said one thing. And that's a message that public relations people know very well. I work with many solid professionals at my School of Communication and in this town.
Speaking with Jill Olmstead, journalism professor at American University, we're talking about the Trump White House communications. We talked about tweeting, and I know some news organizations have gone so far as to even assign a reporter to follow Trump on Twitter and report on his latest tweets. And so that's obviously a new form of reporting.
It is. That, however, boy, that is something that needs to be monitored. But if that was my full-time job, I think I'd go nuts as a journalism professional. If you can do that, report on those within the context of also knowing about public policy and telling people about it, then that's fine. Or if you are a morning talk show host who's not also a mainly a news person, if you're a talker, that can be great entertainment. But it's our job to be a watchdog. And that means that you examine what the policy is. You don't just praise it. It's not our job to praise things. It is our job to be the lookout for, okay, is this the truth, and how many sides of this equation are there? Because there's a lot more than just one and two.
We're going to have a new command structure within the White House. Obviously, you have a new chief of staff, John Kelly, and now from what I'm reading, everyone's going to report to him. Will that have any impact on communications?
As an American citizen, I hope so. And I hope so as a media person, because we all want our country to succeed. The media, and I just returned from my native Midwest. I had a family vacation up in Wisconsin. I'm originally from Minnesota. And, you know, that is key area. A lot of those people have a very different view than the rest of the country. And I just think it's really important to make sure that we get all of those viewpoints in there, but that we examine what is behind the intent of a statement. We can't get into somebody's head. We can only, which is why, again, I would argue that you do have to pay attention to literally what the president says in those tweets, and reporters have to monitor what they say, because that's the only way that we know of to understand what our president is talking about, what he's thinking. And in a time when we have North Korea on the brink, we have all these troubles with Russia, and you're trying to strong-arm China, we have to keep up on what is behind on all of this.
Let me ask you, as a former White House reporter, you have covered the White House. All these changes, does it make it tougher for White House correspondents to do their job?
Oh, I think it's an incredibly tense environment. You have got more outlets than ever before. You've got the eyes of the world upon you, and you have the technology that has so radically changed that you don't even have 5 minutes to really digest something. You see a tweet from the president or some other form of communication, and you have to immediately report about it. No reporter is an expert on everything, so it takes time to call up a health expert or a defense expert or environmental, whatever it is. So I think the environment inside the White House, when you're hearing reporters talk about the tenseness in the staff, I think they're also talking about the tenseness that exists with reporters. It's a very, very tough job. And from what I'm hearing from former students who are entering the profession now, it's actually not a place that some people want to be. They don't want to be in Washington covering this, because it's really, it could make your career or it could very easily break your career.
What about the fact that some of the White House press briefings have not been on camera, which is something new because in the past they always were? Some of the Trump briefings haven't been on camera. Is that a big deal?
I think it is. It's not just that I come from the world of radio and television broadcasting, but it is the way that the public has more access to information. So that's the most important thing. A lot of people now might have their computers on at work, but they see the video, they see the crawls, they don't necessarily have the time to dive into the whole full article, at least during the workday, although we know that they're doing that. It does change the environment of how you operate as a reporter.
State Department briefings, those used to be a given every day. They still have them, not as many. Is that a disservice to the public?
Well, from what I understand, there are only in key positions like two holdovers of people who are in key positions of leadership at the State Department. And so I think part of the reason that they're not having as many briefings is because there is just not the emphasis on the State Department that we had under the Clinton and Obama administrations. So I know people at the State Department, when you get them at a social event and they start talking about it's really bad. I mean, those are the words that they use. These are people who are not pontificating for a camera. These are your friends. These are people who live in your neighborhood. And they're saying, yeah, it's very difficult because there's no leadership at the top. And they aren't talking about Rex Tillerson per se as an individual. They're talking about the people that they report most directly to. So there is a vacuum of leadership. That vacuum of leadership becomes scary when you see what is happening on the international stage. So I don't think it's just the number of press conferences, because the State Department, and this is what I tried to make my students aware of too, they're trying not to make news at the State Department. They don't want to do that, much like the Supreme Court. They don't want to make the news. It's only really congressmen and women that really want to make news. These other two branches of government want to sort out the part of the public policy that they're involved with. And so they want to carry out the mission of the president and the lawmakers in the State Department. I know that there are fewer. Because the day that I would normally send my students to those briefings is no longer available. So I personally don't like that. But at least they're having briefings. And they're, to the best of my knowledge, still going to continue to be on-camera briefings. And the fact that the White House has it back in place now is a good thing. Because I think part of what we learn through that is not just a person's words, but we look into their eyes, we hear the tone of their voice, how they say something, and that's how we evaluate whether or not we're getting the truth. We know it's not just the written word, which is why tweets and emails can be so misinterpreted by everybody, not just in the journalism sphere. But we're talking about our own friends, right? How many times have you misread someone's meaning because it's just in black and white and it's not with the full context of the other ways that we get our cues as to what people are talking about?
President Trump, of course, campaigned on being an outsider. The fact that he had never been a politician before, I think that attracted a lot of voters leading up to the November election. He's learning the ropes as being a president and how to function in that role. Is it safe to say the media are also learning how to cover this White House, given the fact that it is different from previous administrations?
Sure. That's going to be a normal process. But what's confusing and disorienting is if you like I was an environmental and agriculture reporter for many years, and I covered that policy. So I knew what milk subsidies were when other reporters would come into a hearing and they would not understand anything about that. And so you might help them out by explaining it. I think you really have to be comfortable with the fact that if you're doing a honest job about trying to find the truth, you take some comfort in that, and you realize that you cannot control what the president does or what any lawmaker does. All you can control is doing your best to make sure that you have done due diligence in trying to get at the truth. And that's what I train my students to do. That's what I look for when I'm a consumer of media. Is, okay, so where did they get that piece of information? That's another thing I want to train students in is, okay, so how do you understand whether that's a legitimate source or not? And the difference between, okay, that's an opinion, that's fine. Either side of the aisle, opinion is fine, but label it as such and don't intermix it with something that you're offering as fact.
Jill, this has been an interesting start to the Trump administration. It figures to get even more interesting as time advances. Thanks for joining us on Update One.
It's a pleasure.
Jill Olmstead, a journalism professor at American University, has been the guest. I'm Mike Hempen, a member of the Broadcast Podcast Committee here at the National Press Club, and thanks for listening. You have been listening to Update One, a production of the National Press Club's Broadcast Committee. You can comment on this show or any episode of Update One by going to facebook.com/PressClubDC or on Twitter @PressClubDC. Thanks for listening to Update One.